You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Mark Gastineau. You're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, it's Monday. It's the Michael K. Show on, yes, on 98.7 ESPN New York. No Michael and no Peter. So we're a Kayla's show and we're a Rosenberg-less show. But boy, do we have an ad. Do we have a plus today? And that is my friend, my buddy, my pal, my brother from another mother, Mr. Bob
Wishman,
the voice of the Jets. How are you, Bob?
Yeah, when I'm not on, I'm your, you know, now that I'm here, it's a whole different vibe.
Oh, I will say, anything that I say with you not present,
yeah,
I will say with you present.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy the sound of your voice.
Yeah, and you don't?
Not to the extent you do.
It's talk radio.
I understand.
Am I not supposed to talk?
Oh, see, don't get defensive. I'm just, you challenged me right out of the box, so I just was going to tell you that I say it on the air. It's a very popular show, Bob. It's eventually going to get back to you.
Well, I get
these, these things are not said in a vacuum.
I work Saturdays with Vital. Should I just leave it there? Like, that's the tweet? I work Saturdays with Vital. So right. I guess I can't be too chatty.
That is true. Well, we're having some fun with you, Bob. I go back with Bob a long, long way. As a matter of fact, only anybody in the business would appreciate this, but sometimes you love it when you lift the skirt. Is that being an old update guy on the Fan meant you had to do the IDs. And there's some times when I'll be in the car, Bob, just driving around, and they'll call for a station ID, and something will twinge in me, right. Like a muscle memory. Like I got to scramble into the studio to give, like, a quick update. And the very first ID I ever did at the Fan, during a Met game, because I started in July there, I walk out of the booth, and who is there to cheer and congratulate me on my first ID? Back in 1996 was Bob Wischusen.
I have no memory of that.
Well, because it wasn't significant to you.
Not even a little bit. Yeah, I have no memory of that. But I'm glad I was nice.
This is another example of you're more important in my life than I am in yours. So that means every once in a while that you have to feel like, oh, my God, Don's attacking me on the air, which I am because it's all in good fun because we're buddies, is just know that. You're more significant in my life than I am in yours, and I think that balances it out.
The number of people that really legitimately will say to me, like, why don't those guys like you? Like, they believe everything you guys say.
That's just silly. Because we just like to have fun.
Yeah. And I tell them that it all actually stems from you and I swapping a radio show that neither of us particularly wanted to do.
Oh, no, listen, that's the truth. And what Bob is talking about, and don't worry, we'll get to everything. We got a long day. Is that Bob used to do Inside the Jets, and Inside the Jets was a show.
Well, you used to do Inside the Jets.
Well, yeah, because this is going way back at Champions, right across the street from Nassau Coliseum.
That's, by the way, that's the key to this story, this place is.
Right, a place that neither of us live close to.
That's one way to put it.
And because I did the pre and post for the Jets, the idea was that I would be the one that would go out there and I would do the show with Terry Bradway, who is a joy.
Awesome.
Terry was great to work with, and the Jets were very good to work with. Some of the biggest names on the Jets would come into Champions, and we would do a show with them.
And now, then Mike T. Mike T was great, too. Both great.
Yeah, they were very good. That's where I first met Mike Tannenbaum, because there was one day that Terry couldn't do it, and Mike was working there, and he jumped in, and we were both getting married around the same time, so we kind of swapped stories about that, and he was very good, and the guests would come, and And it was a real a bunch of – it was a fun show to do. It was just that I lived in Central Jersey. It was just a long drive out there. And then they decided, well, listen, Bob's available to do it now. He wasn't before. So – and now our show moved to the afternoon, which made it even more difficult for me to be able to do. So they just decided maybe it was just part of Bob's contract. Now Bob would do it. And Kay turned it into – Bob was choosing taking a job away from Don.
Right.
Which was not the case at all.
I stole the show from you, which, by the way, that would mean stealing from you the right to drive from New Jersey every Monday during rush hour to the Nassau Coliseum.
Right. I gave that job up in a similar fashion the way Santonio Holmes threw the ball to the 49ers that time when he got hurt. I did not give it up. With any kind of fight. It was just, here it is, Bob. And we were cool with that. Michael turned it into Bob Weaselshoesin takes the job away from Don LaGreca. So that's where it all kind of started.
Right. Stole Don's role with the Jets. A role that Don would have probably sacrificed like 25% of his salary to never have to do again.
Right. It was between the length of time it took to get to the Coliseum to do the show and then having to do a show where they get crushed by the Dolphins like 35-3, and the only player available to us that day was Tom Tupa because he was their leading rusher in the game.
So you got to sit across from the general manager for an hour before the show starts.
Right.
The day before, his team lost by 4 touchdowns. Now you got to sit across from him for an hour, ask him what he wants to talk about, and then whoever made 3 tackles on special teams was your guest.
One quick story with Terry Bradway, again, who was a joy to work with. But there was one day we're doing Inside the Jets, and the place is unusually packed. Like, there would be a crowd, but it was over the top, the amount of people. There was, like, a line out the door to get in. And the reason for that, it was No Doubt was playing at the Coliseum that night. So a lot of people were going in for a drink before the show. So Terry's like, why are there so many people here today? And I said, No Doubt. He's like, yeah, No Doubt. There's a lot of people here today. I was like, No Doubt is playing at the Coliseum. And he looked at me like, I had no idea what I
did. By the way, did you ever do that show and it shifted to Charlie Brown's, or you and I had already like the,
okay,
the
well, I then became a fill-in.
Okay.
So I did do shows at all the different
right.
Charlie Brown's. There was also the there was one in Morristown we did.
Yeah, well, that Morristown, that was a gift, right? Now you're in New Jersey. Like, that
right,
was unbelievable.
That was easy.
But the Charlie Brown, so not only do you drive, you know, like 5 hours in rush hour traffic to Long Island to do this show, but Charlie Brown's, they pretty much set us up, like, at the hostess stand. Right? There were, like, 2 tables that could see you. Then those separators, and old ladies would walk by and shoot a stink eye on their way to the salad bar because we're being too loud.
Right, oh, yeah.
Because the show
yeah.
would be in there, like, during the early bird. Right. It was like 6 o'clock. Like, the dinner crowd wasn't even in there yet. And one lady kept walking away. Can you keep it down, please? Can you just – I'm like, no, we really can't.
Yeah, it was – but it was fun to do, and that's where it kind of all started with Weaselshoesin and having fun. But we love Bob. Bob is one of our favorites, and I'm glad we're getting a chance to work with him today. Michael will be back tomorrow. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. All right, a very interesting weekend for both the Mets and the Yankees. And we'll get to the Yankees in a bit because I think they did a great job considering how shorthanded they were to take 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox, now close within 7 of the division, and give you some hope for that. But I wanted to kind of begin with the Mets, Bob, and you could probably empathize with my situation. Just when you're kind of pigeonholed into being that guy. And on this show, I'm the Met guy. Because we're on YES, home of the Yankees. Our main host, the Michael Kay Show, is the voice of the Yankees.
How am I a Yankees boy?
So I'm supposed to be the guy that's supposed to balance it out by being Met boy. But, Bob, I'm not happy with what's going on with this team. The only positive thing you can possibly say about the Mets right now is that they're in first place. And that's significant because you want to be in first place. But make no mistake, if they're in any other division, they're in all kinds of trouble. They just were gifted by the schedule gods. 7 consecutive games against the lousy Pirates and won 2 of them. So if you want to celebrate all you want, the heart that they showed and reversing what happened the previous Sunday and coming back from 6 runs down and win the game, yada, 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 that's fine. They had to do it. because of what happened the previous 2 days. The way they lost Saturday was gut-wrenching. So good on them for coming back, Bob, and actually, you know, winning a game. But the fact that they lost 5 of 7 games against that team, and make no mistake, that team stinks. They're 20 games under 500 and deserve to be. Tell me you're not in a little bit of trouble here. And you're only in first place because you're in a lousy division.
And
this
the Phillies
team needs
are
a lot of help.
The Phillies are coming, too, because the Phillies have the easiest schedule in baseball second half of the year. I agree with that. I think the Mets right now have a house of cards kind of feel to them. The DeGrom injury, Lindor going down, I mean, an oblique for a shortstop. If you told me he was going to be out for 7 or 8 weeks, I would buy it. Maybe he'll come back a lot sooner than that. But this is one of those gray area injuries where you don't know when he's coming back. I don't think there is a team in baseball that has earned it more, deserves it more, and needs it more to make a big trade over the next 2 weeks than the Mets. The Mets need help. They need a cavalry charge. And now, there are guys in this lineup that you can get more out of. Like Alonso could occasionally hit a home run at home. I think that would be allowed. J.D. Davis obviously being back, that helps. Conforto, he and Gleyber Torres kind of had those parallel weekends, right? Like maybe these are two guys that are finally going to start coming alive for their respective teams. But the Mets are a team that I think needs – Chris Bryant makes all the sense in the world to me, even as a rental for the rest of the year. But they deserve – they have earned, adding payroll, whatever it is – a big trade to be made to help their hopes down the stretch.
Yeah, because they don't have to apologize for being in a lousy division. They need to take advantage of it.
Yep.
But you know, listen, they've overcame a lot of injuries early on in the season, and they were a real feel-good story, I think, early when there were 16 guys on the IL, and they were a mess, and yet they were still winning games and fighting through a lot of adversity. But now they got J.D. Davis back, and he had a big game on Saturday, and he's contributing, and you're still losing. And so the Nimmos are back and the Nitos are back and the Alonzos are back. And all right, so you lost Lindor, but it wasn't like he was tearing the cover off the ball in the first half of the season. So they need to make a deal. They need to make it quick. And they're going to get held up, Bob. They are. I mean, there's a lot of teams that want to make deals with the Cubs who are in sell mode here. And apparently right now the reason the deal hasn't been made for Bryant is because they're asking for too much. But at some point you have to ask yourself, we have to do it. Because if you don't do it, you're going to fade. And you're going to miss this opportunity. And then the DeGrom stuff, I don't know how to feel about it, Bob.
I don't either. I'm with you. If at the end of the season, let's say, just for the sake of argument, that everything that has happened to this point with DeGrom are little bumps in the road, and he's going to come back end of July, early August, and be DeGrom the rest of the season. It would be criminal to have this team be in first place, not give it the help it needs, and at the end of the season say, boy, that was another year of DeGrom, and it's gone. And how many more years out there ahead of us do we have of Jacob DeGrom being Jacob DeGrom? Like, you can make an argument right now. And Ohtani throws a big, you know, curveball, pun intended, into this argument. But you can make an argument right now that the difference between DeGrom and the number two guy at what he does in the world of sports is a bigger gap than anybody in any sport anywhere in the world. He might be the best athlete in the world right now doing what he does. And to let another year of him performing like this go by and not even have a playoff berth to show for it, you know, and you know as a Met fan, I mean, no Met fan wants to hear with a 3-4 game lead, even a 3-4 game lead in September, that everything's going to be okay. Hang in there. Trust this group. No. How many times in September, how many times with 2 weeks to go in the season has a Met fan seen a 2-3-4-5 game lead or more all of a sudden evaporate, and it's the first week of October and you're sitting there going, I cannot believe I don't have a Met game to watch tonight because they blew this.
No.
So they need to go out and help this team.
Yeah, 2007, they blew a 7.5 game lead with 17 games left to play. So look, nobody's ever going to feel comfortable. We're in the middle of Diamond Notes on the Michael Kay Show, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. But what I don't know how to feel about DeGrom is he injury prone, or is he just so important to the team that anytime he gets any kind of feeling, they freak out about it and it becomes an issue? Because there's no question he's got fight in him. He fights through this. He tries to continue to pitch through it. So are they just oversensitive to it, or is it just him trying to overcome a bunch of things here, and then I'm just waiting for the atomic bomb to go off where it's something he actually doesn't get up from? Because where is this team going to be if he can't pitch? He's one of the only, like, sole reasons why you believe that this team can make a run, because it's almost a fait accompli. They win the game he pitches because of how good he's been this year. But he's got to pitch.
Yep, and that didn't used to be the case. I mean, at least now, if there's one small, you know, or one big positive with him performing the way he's picking, they're actually making his performances stand up. Whereas last year and basically through his entire career before this season, you know, the joke of baseball was the best pitcher in baseball history is whoever is starting opposite Jacob DeGrom, because the Mets could never get a run for the guy and could never – at least they are winning the games that he starts this year. And I think that's probably the single biggest reason why this house of cards hasn't fallen down. Right, their record is the inverse this year of what it normally is with him on the mound. That's probably solely why they're in first place.
Yeah, because again, I'm panicking about this team. They're still a good team. I just don't think they're good enough to be a division winner. They just are in the conversation because of the division that they're in. But you're starting to see the flaws, and I'm tired of hearing about, well, Don, they've had so many injuries. This is pretty much as healthy as they've been really all year. And I can't sit there and say that they lost these games because of the injuries. They just are not a great offensive team. And they've relied so much on their pitching early on. But now you're starting to see Stroman has not been great over the last month or so. You know, Walker is a guy, admittedly, that nobody else was interested in him but the Mets when they signed him. And my God, that play yesterday, I got a tweet from somebody who asked, what was more embarrassing, that play or the David Cone play in Atlanta? You remember that one when he was arguing a play at first base and two runs scored? This one was a lot worse. Now, I understand what Walker was trying to do, get the ball from going fair, but you got to keep it in your glove. You got to listen to what the umpire says. You just can't let runs score without anybody doing anything. And I almost felt that Rojas got thrown out, kind of just cover for the brain fart that his team had. And kind of just argue that how in God's name did you call that a fair ball? Bob, it was fair. The umpires did the right thing. I think Rojas was covering for an entire brain fart from his team.
Yeah, A, it was fair. And B, when I was in Little League, they taught you to pick the ball up. Just pick it up, right? Same force and effect of knocking it, you know, 10 feet away from the line. And obviously he knocked it like 30 feet away from the line inadvertently. I agree with you. I understand what he was trying to do. He was trying to get it into foul territory as quickly as he possibly could before it rolled back over the line, which obviously it did. I'm not going to take one really bad moment. It's a 162-game season. Every team's going to have a bad moment like that at some point during the year. I think what's probably a little more dangerous with yesterday's game, and you wonder, that kind of House of Cards theme, how unbelievably good he's been and how bad he was yesterday outside of that. Don't let that one moment, I think, shroud. He was bad outside of that bad moment. And that bad moment became the focal point of a six-run inning. But he put a lot of guys on base in order to have that moment be created.
Right. And really, right now, he is your number two starter. I know Stroman's got that. But right now, when you go the pecking order of who's been the better pitchers over the last month or so, I think he's been your number two guy. And this is all moot if they're able to get Syndergaard and Carrasco back, and it sounds like they'll get Carrasco back before Syndergaard, but these are guys that haven't thrown a pitch all year, so you're not really exactly sure what's going to happen. So House of Cards is a great way to put it, and it's great to be in first place, but I'm sorry, you can't apologize your way through everything and every flaw that you have just because you're a first place team. There's issues here. In this second half, again, gifted seven games against a lousy team, and you only won two of them. And now you've got a lot of games in the second half of the year against all these pursuers that have admitted that they're going to be buyers. Atlanta lost to Acuna, but they're still going to be buyers. As Bob said, Philadelphia's on the come. Yeah, their bullpen stinks, but they're looking to add. Washington's got a winning pedigree. They're looking to add. So not only, Bob, are those teams looking to get better, they might be in contention for the players that you want at the deadline.
Well, it's the blessing and the curse of being in a really bad division or a very mediocre division. You're in first place, and you are blessed by the fact that you've got teams that are mediocre to poor behind you. But because you're also around 500, been kind of a mediocre, slightly above mediocre team, it keeps all these other teams in it. Right? Like if the Mets had a 12-game lead, it would probably completely change the mindset of these other teams in their division. But why in that division would any of these teams outside of Miami, why would they not think that they've got a shot at it? They see the same thing we see with the Mets.
Yeah. Well, they've said it. We're buyers. And people were shocked. Why are they buyers? They're under 500. They're buyers because the team they're chasing after is severely flawed. So somebody is going to be the Washington football team this year. Right? The team that wins a lousy division. And all those teams feel like they can be that team. The 06 Cardinals, the 73 Mets. There's always those teams that, hey, somebody's got to win this division. Might as well be me. And then the feeling always was, Bob, once they get into the playoffs, look at this rotation. I'll put it up against anybody. Are you really right now? When DeGrom's on the IL, Walker doesn't look great the way he did in the first half of the season. Stroman doesn't look like he did in the first half of the season. Counting on two pitchers that haven't thrown at all this year.
Yeah.
You just don't want this all to slip through your fingers. And now you've got an owner that isn't afraid to go over the luxury tax. He's not afraid to make a big deal. Now, Sandy might talk him out of giving up the farm, but I thought you put it very well. I think this team has played to a point this year where you kind of you owe them a chance to make it happen.
Milwaukee leads their division. San Francisco, the Dodgers, San Diego, all really good teams. Respectively, Milwaukee run differentials plus 62, San Diego's plus 96, the Dodgers are plus 154, the Giants, even as much of a surprise as they are in that division, are plus 118, the Mets are plus 5.
Yeah.
So you compare them with the other teams leading their respective divisions or the top teams that you know are going to be wild card teams are going to be in the postseason, right? I mean, it would be a stunner right now if those other teams I mentioned didn't make the postseason. The NL East is up for grabs, and the Mets are basically treading water this entire season, scratching out wins, and they deserve all the credit in the world for, I think, surviving the terrible starts this year for Lindor. We have not seen Conforto. We have not seen, you know, the real, at least at home, Pete Alonso. I mean, you know, this is a team that I do think has, even with guys that are on their roster, a high ceiling in the second half of the season. But you got a long way to go offensively before you catch those other teams. So I think they owe it to their fans. With where the position they've put themselves in right now, it is right there for them in the second half of the year. Go make a deal. Be one of those teams that goes out and makes a headline-making deal at the deadline.
And they could, and they might have to do it sooner than later. Because when you wait for the 30th, which is 11 days away, you may not be a first-place team anymore. So it's tough to make a deal. It takes two to tango, but they're going to probably have to make one sooner than later. That's Diamond Notes brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop. Picked or designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit about the Yankees as well. Had a good weekend, and now they find themselves just trying to survive as well. They've got the Phillies coming up, four more with the Red Sox. Then they've got the Rays again. So the schedule is a lot tougher, but an opportunity to make up some ground. And one player in particular impressed me. I'll tell you who that is. It's Don LeGrec and Bob Wischusen on The K Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody! It's me! I'm back! And guess what? It's another Don segment!
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don!
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie!
All right, I wanted to be able to keep my buddy Bob feeling all warm and fuzzy and feel welcome on the show.
Okay.
It's not often that we get a chance to hang out with you and that you get to fill in on the K Show with at least me here or Michael. You've done a couple of times with Peter. So I decided to do this, as humble as you may be. Top five Jet moments as called by Bob Wischusen.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter would never do this. Peter actually, after I subbed in and filled in last summer with him, the following week did like a sub fill in with Alan Hahn and did a poll as to which of the two of us were better with him, and he voted for Alan.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that probably sums up our relationship.
That's a bad guy move.
It's a bad guy move.
And this is a good guy move.
Big time.
All right. And again, I know you're humble. And again, this is not necessarily quality of call, although they're all spectacular.
Oh, thanks.
But I put them in the order of just, you know, big call moments in the 20 years that you've been doing this.
All right. We're not going to listen to all of them, are we?
Oh, every single one.
Oh, for the love of God. All right. So I'm supposed to guess? I mean, in no particular order?
This is the way we do it, so you guess. But obviously, what you'd like to shoot for is number one. A perfect score would be you go from 1 to 5.
Right. Okay.
All right.
My computer. All of a sudden, you ever, like, you're in the middle of a show, and all of a sudden you look up and you realize somehow your computer wasn't plugged in and it's on low battery and the Zoom to yes is about to die?
So, I understand that, while but you I shouldn't be using your computer to look up your own moments.
No. That's where the Zoom is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm on a Zoom here to yes, and the computer that is generating my picture to yes is low battery. Your Mac will be asleep in a moment unless you plug it in. And I thought it was plugged in, and I can't figure out why it's not plugged in. What the hell did the kids do with this? All right. So while I'm trying to figure out how to not lose the Zoom to yes, so I guess my question would be, before I guess, is this like in order of importance of the game or like the call that you thought was just one you remember?
I think it's kind of a combination of the two. I will tell you, all five were significant moments in significant games.
Right.
And I will say just because of everything around it and how unusual the moment was, and how stellar the victory was.
See, you gave me a little hint there.
That's the only one that's in the regular season.
Yeah, there's a butt fumble in there somewhere.
No, they're all positive as well.
Oh, they're all positive. Okay. When you said like how unusual the moment was, I thought that was your way of saying that you're going to stick me with the butt fumble. All right. I think, you know, the first one, I'll just give, you know, ones that immediately leap to mind. The Eric Decker touchdown against the Patriots in overtime.
Thought about it.
That didn't even make the list.
I thought about it.
Who are you taking out?
Because, again, the unusual thing was Belichick deferring in overtime.
All right.
But I do not – I thought about it, right, Andrew? We actually discussed it, but I did not have it making the top five. Who are you taking out? You don't know yet because you haven't gotten one right.
All right. How about – I'll just start maybe chronologically speaking. Game-winning field goal in San Diego back in the playoffs the first year Marty and I were doing the games together.
You know what? That is a terrific, terrific poll. And I've got it at number 4.
To send the Jets to the divisional round. The snap, the placement, the kick, on the way. Good! And the Jets win it! Gangrene sideline explodes onto the field. The final score, 20-17.
I don't think that was your first year, because I have it at January 8th, 2005, so that would have been the 04 year.
Your first year was 02. Yeah. That was probably the first time they had won a road playoff game. That's what it was. That was also notable because that was a call that for years came out of like can openers and barbecue forks that this company sold, where if you like opened a beer, then all of a sudden I would scream about that field goal.
It was a game that was replayed on our air.
Okay.
And kept Greg and I on the air to like 4 o'clock in the morning taking calls.
There you go.
Because that was the late game on Saturday.
Right.
If you remember?
Right. All right.
That's
how about the Sean Green touchdown that capped the big playoff win in New England?
Great pull, Bob, and it's number one.
Second down and 6. Hand off Sean Green. Runs right. Gets to the edge. Stiff arms a man. 10-5. Touchdown. The Jets are going to win it in style here in New England. 1:41 to go, and the Jets celebrate in the Patriots ball yard.
That was also quality of call that made it number one.
Thanks.
But significant game.
Santonio Holmes, the diving catch, the back left corner of the end zone in the playoffs. Did that make it?
No, it did not.
Nah, it's the same game, so I guess that probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, these are all different games.
Okay. I mean, how about first year Marty and I were together? I mean, you could probably pick a call from the 41-0 win by the Jets in the playoffs against the Colts.
Well, that was a great win, but I didn't. That was an all-encompassing moment.
It was 41-0. So yeah.
Yeah.
What about a call from the Packers game that clinched the division?
Ooh,
at the end of the season?
You know what? That I didn't think of that one. I'm not sure I would have it in the top five. That was a good one. That's a good poll. Not there.
I think there was a good Wayne Krabet in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Braylon Edwards, deep against the Colts from Sanchez?
I didn't take – I have that game.
Okay.
But I took the game-winning call.
Okay.
And it's number three.
There you go.
Out of the hold of Weatherford. The snap, the placement down, the kick is on the way, and it is good! And the Jets win it here in Indianapolis, and they are moving on to New England. The final score, the Jets 17, the Colts 16. Nick Folk does it. The Jets advance.
January 8th, 2011. We were all in the building together for that one.
That's right. You guys were there.
Yeah, we were there.
That made it special.
We went to all of the playoff games except Cincinnati and San Diego in those two-year runs. We were in Pittsburgh and New England and Indianapolis for the championship game in 2009. And we were in the building the next year, 2010. That was the same day, Bob, that the 7-9 Seahawks beat the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs. That was the early game. Jet Colts were the late game. So that's number three. So all number... Right. I've got the overtime win against the Chargers in the end of the 04 season at four. I got the one I just mentioned at three. Number one was the Patriots-Jets winning it in style, so I need a two and a five.
I'm missing two?
Yeah.
I mean, these are my calls. How embarrassing is it?
No, you've got a lot of them.
Two.
Well, it's,
goodness
you're just
gracious.
Humble.
Revis, the pick six against the Cowboys.
There was another moment in that game.
In that same game.
In that same game. You're talking about the September 11th game.
Yeah.
2011. MetLife, opening day 2011. There was a play that was more significant than that.
The block punt?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's number five.
All right.
McBryer has the punt blocked. The Jets blocked the punt. It's loose. Picked up. Running in for a touchdown is Isaiah Trufant. The Jets are an extra point away from tying the game. It might have been Joe McKnight that blocked the punt. Trufant scores. Unbelievable.
The late Joe McKnight.
The late Joe McKnight. It was. Wow. Turn
the game around. A play that I missed. Because that was the first play after the two-minute warning. And that's when Greg and I would have to leave to get down to the coaches' club.
Right.
And so we were stuck in the elevator, and we learned that we had to be a little bit more strategic after that. Jets, Cowboys, number five, the block punt. So we're looking for number – I think it's significant because it was that – just to give you a little bit of a hint, that first championship game run in 2009.
Okay, regular season or playoffs?
No, this is a playoff. The Cowboys were the only regular season in the top five.
Man, it just goes to show you how much, like, how foggy my memory is that I really, you should just tell me, rather than have me painfully sit here and try
to think
of what it is.
Let's play it, and maybe he can tell us what game it was. All right, play number two.
Hand off Sean Green, up the middle, busts one to the 50, breaks a tackle, he's at the 40, left side 30, there goes Sean Green, 20, 10, 5, touchdown! Sean Green takes it the distance, 53 yards, and the Jets are on top, 16-7.
You know, it's funny the number of times that I look back and a name that keeps popping up from, like, of all the guys that I've called plays for over the years, Sean Green is probably, like, the most played highlight guy of my career.
Yeah, we were talking about that during the break. Yeah, he's in two of these.
Yeah, the Jets don't have probably, well, over the last 10 years, it's kind of been hard to find a guy or two that you want to, be playing.
And I thought that was significant, Bob, because it's so easy to revisionist history. They were a big-time underdog in that game after beating Cincinnati, flying all the way out to the left coast to play that game, and then they win the game 17-14. But that's where they took control on that play. And then advancing to the championship game the following week against Indianapolis. And if you remember, the guy that completely whiffed on Sean Green was Antonio Cromartie, who the very next year becomes a Jet. Or the year, a couple of years after that.
Yep.
Ends up becoming a Jet. And he was the one that Olayed and allowed Sean Green to go the rest of the next 50 yards for the touchdown.
Yeah, if you want story time, like, we could go back at some point during the show to Marty and I's first year for the Jets, and I can tell you the whole story about how they almost fired me, because that's fun too.
And I think I remember because I was kind of a part of that. Bob will tell that story coming up.
Everybody was kind of a part of that.
And because that is a fun, that is a very fun story that I was going to probably save for a book, but still, it wasn't fun at the time.
You know,
20 years later,
I,
we can look back and laugh. But.
I will give it to the audience today. Right. I'm not going to write a book. My life is not even remotely interesting enough to fill up more than about a chapter of a book. So, yeah, right. I'd be more than happy to give that story away for free.
All right, we are going to do that coming up next. I want to remind everybody, 98.7 ESPN Beach Bash is back Friday, August 20th. Bar A in Lake Como, New Jersey, becomes Bar K. Make your plans to head down to the Jersey Shore to join the Michael K. Show live from 2 to 6:30 p.m. with special musical guest Pat Rowdy Band. Stay tuned for two chances to score VIP access later in today's show. It's all brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer, Samwell Pain Management, Calandra's Bakery, and Yingling Flight. You must be 21 years of age to enter. Bob, story time coming up next, plus lots of Mets and Yankees on the show right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
.306 in the big city. Don and Bob with you until 6:30. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. Before story time with Bob, I just want to confirm something with Andrew. The big fella's back, right?
He is.
He will be joining us at 5:40?
Yeah, 5:50, yeah.
Bob, that's going to feel like a... like a 2:30 in the morning Saturday night at the Fan back in the day. Me, yeah. You, and Carlin talking.
Yeah, the Jackson Hole Diner cheeseburger heartburn's going to come roaring back at about 5:30 tonight. I'm with you.
Oh, that's gonna be something to look forward to. And we have, I'm assuming, an Andrew vehicle for ENN at 6. Is that correct?
That's right. I'll do it. Yeah.
All right. Also want to apologize. I said the Mets won 2 out of 7 against the Pirates. It was actually 3 because it was a 4-game set. And they split that doubleheader back last week before the All-Star break. Still, to go 3-4 against that team, a little bit alarming, but I wanted to get that right. So now it is time for a little story on how Bob Wischusen almost was not the voice of the Jets.
Right, so 2002, Marty and I are hired, right? And the Jets start off that year 2-5. And, Don, you remember? I mean, you were on the pre- and post-game show starting that year, weren't you, with Greg?
Yes.
Okay, so they start off 2-5, and if you remember, they won game one against Buffalo, then lost their next 3 games by a combined 100 points. Right? They got drilled 3 games in a row, 34-3, basically 3 straight weeks. So already tensions were high. They're 2-5, they go to San Diego. So, and by the way, I'm also hosting a talk show all the way back then on MSG with Bill Daughtry.
Right.
So
talk
not
of,
only
was it talk of our town?
Talk of our town. So right. Not only am I in a position, and by the way, the only people that were watching or listening to that show were probably Jets employees, just to see what I was going to go on and say. So the first year I've got the job, they are 1-3, losing 3 games by 100 points, 2-5, and I'm forced 5 days a week to go on the air and talk about what they look like. So already I'm off to not the best start, somewhat by circumstances. So they go to San Diego, and they're playing the this was the game that turned their season around.
Yeah.
But they go to San Diego, and it's like a 3-day trip. So we get there on Friday. Saturday morning, I am asked by a couple of the Jet beat writers, who, I mean, I had spent 6 years in the room covering them before I even became, you know, the pre- and post-game host guy and then got the job full-time. So I knew all these guys. These guys were all my friends. They said, hey, I mean, we're off all day on Saturday. We're in San Diego. You want to go play golf? I said, sure, I'll go rent some clubs. That sounds great. Herm is out for a jog, Herm Edwards. Herm sees me getting into a cab with 3 beat writers to go play golf. And already now I'm on, like, the poop list because I'm hanging out with the enemy. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
This is our broadcaster going to hang out with the beat writers who are killing the team every single day in the media room. So that was number one. Number two, a guy that I used to work with as a freelancer was producing a show in San Diego about the Chargers. And he asked me, would you come down and do a spot? We'll send a car for you. Dennis, the late Dennis Green, the old Vikings coach, he at the time was living in San Diego and had a role on this show. And so they sent a car for me. I take a ride down to this TV studio in downtown San Diego, and I do a segment with Dennis Green in director's chairs, right? And it's just, hey, what's going on with the Jets? And I basically spend about, 6 or 7 minutes just regurgitating everything that Herm Edwards has been saying in his press conferences. They need to be better against the run. They need to help the quarterback out by running the ball. They just need to be a better tackling team, blah, blah, blah. Don't really say anything controversial or even headline-grabbing about a 2-5 team. I leave and ride back to my hotel, not really thinking anything of it. It turns out that right after I left, the very next segment, some hairdo highlight guy from San Diego is in the next segment and says LaDainian Tomlinson is going to run for 250 yards against these guys tomorrow. Are you kidding? They've got no chance. So this is being said after I leave. I get back to the hotel, go to bed, whatever, get up the next morning, do the game. Little known to me and unbeknownst to me or anybody on our broadcast, Ted Cottrell, the Jets defensive coordinator, right before their big Saturday night before the game meeting with the defense, is watching that show. He sees me on that show, sees this guy say, LaDainian Tomlinson is going to run for 500 yards against you tomorrow, goes down to the defensive meeting and says, hey, everybody, I was just watching a show up in my room. They think LaDainian Tomlinson is going to run for 300 yards against you guys tomorrow. And I think I was told it was Jason Ferguson. I mean, whoever. One of these guys steps up in the defensive meeting room and goes, hey, our radio announcer was on that show. And that game of telephone became our radio announcer said that LaDainian Tomlinson is going to run all over our defense. All right. I had no idea that any of this had gone on. Then the Jets go out and win. Right? Like they got, they steamrolled them. They really shoved the Chargers around. Now I'm in the locker room after the game. And I go up to interview one of the defensive linemen at the locker. And he starts yelling at me on the air. You're the jerk that said we didn't have a chance to win this game. I've got the microphone. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then put the microphone right back in his face for a response. Meanwhile, Marty's somewhere across the locker room, like interviewing other guys, hearing this. Well, all of this like explodes because of a game of telephone that was said on a show that I was on, but I didn't say it. So right. Now I fly back to New York. The next morning, I get a call from my boss. What are you doing? Like that they want to fire you. I'm like, what are you talking about? So you can't go on a show and kill the team? So I actually had to call back the producer in San Diego and have him play the segment on the phone for me so I could hear what I said. Because, I mean, you do a million of those things. I don't even remember what I said. I'm like, now you start thinking, oh, my right. God, did I say something that really might have been bad? So after all was said and done, I'm getting in the car with the beat reporters. I'm on TV. Somebody says the Jets are getting killed. Players are yelling at me on the postgame show live in the locker room. Now I got to put a suit on. I got to go in and sit down with Herm and clear the air. I got to call Woody. Right, actually had a one-on-one with Woody Johnson. He'll laugh about it now. This is 20 years ago. But he gets on the phone. He's like, hey, like, what are you doing? I thought we were going to like have a really good relationship here. I said, I think we do have a good relationship. I didn't say anything. But I just kind of fell on my sword, and it was a big mea culpa. Raceman wrote about it. Like, it was this big thing. All of a sudden, Carlin, at the time, was producing Mike and the Mad Dog. He's calling me. They want to get me on the show as a guest to talk about the column that Raceman wrote. I'm like, no, I don't think that's going to be a good career move for me to come on the air with you guys. I'm just going to kind of let this thing go. But, yeah, but it was literally the perfect storm.
And it took a while to clear this up because then the next day, that Monday, I'm doing the show with Terry Bradway. And so I'm in meetings about, like, what to say, don't bring this up. And it was, if I remember correctly, even by, like, 6 o'clock the following day, it still, like, wasn't 100% clear what happened.
Oh, no, this was days.
Yeah, like, I think, like, Terry was, like, red-hotty. Terry's telling me, because I'm like, what happened? What did Bob say? He's like, you wouldn't believe it. He's our radio announcer. He goes on and says that LaDainian Tomlinson's going to run for 300 yards.
Exactly, and I never said it.
I remember calling Bob Parenti, who was my boss at the time. I was like, well, how should I handle it? And Bob's like, well, just don't do what Bob did. I'm like, okay.
And the irony of it is the entire story was based around someone else on the show saying it. Some other kind of pudgy guy on TV that might have looked like me. And it literally was, I believe it was Ted Cottrell who said to the whole defense,
right,
I was just watching the show up in my room. You wouldn't believe what these guys said. They said LaDainian Tomlinson's going to run for 300 yards tomorrow. They said you guys are going to get steamrolled. They said you guys don't have any chance. And one of the defensive guys popped up and was like, our radio announcer was on that show. I was watching that, and it became, literally by telephone, our radio announcer said that you guys are going to get dump trucked tomorrow, and there it was. So
and it probably doesn't get back to everybody, so there's probably still guys from that team who still think you did that.
Well, you know what? I've outlasted them all. I'm still there, so I guess whatever.
Yep. You win. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. The other topic that I wanted to bring up, and we'll get your calls in too, at 1-800-919-3776, and that is, you know, the Mets and Yankees have similar records, and just one's in a really good division, and the Yankees are in fourth place, and the Mets are in first. Like, who's better, who's more equipped to have a better second half of the season? And certainly the Yankees started off better by winning 2 out of 3 from Boston and the Mets losing 2 out of 3 from Pittsburgh. I still think the Mets are better equipped, Bob, to have the bigger second half because I think they have an owner that wants to add to payroll and is willing to make a big splash where the Yankees are not going over the luxury tax. So I don't know if they're bringing any big names. Matter of fact, I know they're not going to unless it fits salary-wise. So just from that standpoint and the division the Mets are in, I think – As down as I am about this team right now, I still think the Mets are poised to have a better second half than the Yankees. Do you agree
completely.
With that?
Agree completely. I think the Mets, that's a no-brainer between the two. I mean, if I were to run down, just give me kind of an up or down. You think they could be better or may not be better in the second half of the season. Can Pete Alonso be better, certainly at home in the second half of the season than he's been?
Yes.
Yeah. Can Dom Smith be better?
Yes.
When Lindor comes back, can he be better?
Yes, be better.
Can McNeil be better?
Yeah.
Can Conforto be better?
It has to be.
I mean, the only guy that probably at this point can't be better is DeGrom. Who could be better than what he's been?
I don't think DeGrom can be better. I don't think Stroman can be better. Right. I don't think Walker can be better because of how great they were in the first half of the season.
And they shouldn't have to be if the lineup starts to produce the way you think eventually it will. I also think this is, of the two teams, the more likely to go out and make a significant deadline deal. Yes. So they should add to a team that I think could be better. And they're in a division that's not nearly as good. Right? I mean, the competition in their division isn't nearly as good as the competition in the Yankees division.
Right. And even though I think the Red Sox might come down a peg in the second half of the year, the Rays are still your defending champions. But the Blue Jays could be very good. You know, so there's a lot to have to climb over there. Even in the wild card situation for the Yankees, just being, 3.5 back and 2 in the loss column, they've got to climb over a bunch of teams that are between them and Oakland for that final wild card spot. Right now, taking a glance at it, you've got to climb over Cleveland, Seattle, and Toronto before you can even get to Oakland. So, and all of them, listen to the Yankees, we talk about run differential. The Yankees are chasing after an Oakland team that is a plus 30 run differential. The Yankees right now are plus 7.
And the Mets are plus 5.
Yeah, so and that's always a great indicator. I bring that up all the time, too. Like in hockey, Neil Smith told me, especially with the shootout. It's like, if you really want to know how good a team is, look at their goal differential. That's going to tell you. And if you see a team with a minus goal differential, they're a house of cards.
Right. And the Mets right now, that's the only thing I'm worried about, is the Mets right now, to me, that's why I think they owe it to their fans to make a deal, if not two. Because it's not like if they just put Chris Bryant at third, all their problems are solved. I think they can supplement the team in multiple ways. But, yeah, I think the Mets right now are teetering on, all of a sudden get bypassed by the Phillies. We might not hear from them again if that's the case. So I think this is a team that needs to make a deal in the next 10 days.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Rob in Lenox, you're on ESPN New York. What's up, buddy?
Hey, it's great to talk to both of you. You guys do such an outstanding job with the Jets and Rangers. And Don, thanks for a great year, really, even though we didn't make the playoffs. A couple of thoughts on the Yankees and then maybe one on the Rangers. About the Yankees, is there any chance – look, I've been trying to think about being a seller now, but the thing is that I don't think the Yankees are going to be sellers when you see where they are and so forth. with all the injuries and so forth, I felt that this team has needed a catalyst for 10 years. The last guy they had was Johnny Damon. Is there any way they could go out and get Frazier from Pittsburgh? And what would they have to give up? And Don, if you're general manager Chris Drury right now, what are you doing in terms of bringing in players? You got Barkley Goodrow. You bring in another center maybe. I know this team needs some toughness up front and some force that can score inside, so I'll get your thoughts about that. And thanks. And by the way, have a great Jet year, and then I can't wait to Ranger season, Don. So thanks so much for all the all Rob, the time. Appreciate it so much.
Quickly with the Rangers, people were surprised they protected Kevin Rooney. They did that because they want some toughness, and they had every indication that Seattle was going to take him. So that's why they protected him over Blackwell.
Okay.
The other thing with that right now they've got to figure out, what are you doing long-term with Zibanejad? Goudreau's going to cost you a fortune if you listen to the reports. So before they can start talking about making deals, Rob, they've got to lock down these contracts, because if you don't figure out Zibanejad long-term, you're going to have to then, I think, get in the Eichel sweepstakes, because you're going to need a center that can score. If you keep Zibanejad and then you keep Goudreau, then I think they can kind of focus on making some deals. Now, to the Frazier situation, Pittsburgh would be crazy to give him up, right? I mean, that's somebody that I would think you want to build around because he's such a good player. But if he's available, I would think there's going to be a bunch of teams that are going to be in on him. But I would, watching Pittsburgh and looking where they are, Bob, right now, that's a guy I think you want to build around.
Yep, Ketel Marte is another guy that I think you're going to hear his name as you get closer and closer, because he's such a jack of all trades, such a good player, and affordable for a couple of more years. And you'll have to give to get, but those are two names that I think – I mean, I've heard Marte's name, you know, mentioned as, like, wouldn't he be the perfect fit for the Yankees, right? You could put him in center field. He could play multiple different spots depending on how you want to put the lineup together. National League parks, if you don't have the ability to have the DH. Another, you know, just a like a Swiss Army knife kind of guy. But, yeah, I mean, Frazier, you should have to give up a lot to get Frazier.
Yeah, because I think that's I think Pittsburgh would be crazy to give him up. He's their best player. And he was also – he didn't mention this, but it was in the description of the call about not wanting any part of Joey Gallo. I'm surprised he said that. I don't know why you wouldn't. Oh, yeah, he strikes out a lot. So what? Nobody cares about that in this league anymore. The guy hits home runs. The guy's an A-plus defender. I don't know why you wouldn't want him. Every Yankee fan wants a left-handed bat. He's a left-handed hitter. Hits home runs. So he never get a chance to tell us why he didn't want him, but that's definitely somebody I'd want to bring into the fold. 1-800-919-3776. We got lots of calls to get to. We've got a pretty cool reunion of sorts coming up at 5:50. We've got ENN coming up at 6. It's Don and Bob with Schusen on the K-Show on Yes at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You know, the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. It was a big sports weekend, the Open, which I didn't care about, but Bob was all in on.
Good job, Don. Way to touch all the bases. Attaboy.
Hey, it did happen. I mean, just because I don't like it doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Can I ask a quick question? Literally, just 30 seconds.
Please.
Where did you despising golf come from? Like, there are sports that I am not a big fan of. Or like, I don't really enjoy, other than the Wimbledon final, watching tennis, but I accept the fact that people like it. I don't despise. Like, you actually have, like, a burning, borderline, uncontrollable, I don't know, you have a hatred for golf in you that I don't understand.
Well, because it's built up over the years, all right? You got frauds like Rosenberg who didn't care about golf. All of a sudden, Tiger's good, and now he's telling me how great it is.
Excuse me? 80% of golf fans out there.
All right, well,
that was the Tiger impact.
And then this does not apply to you. And I'm not saying that because you're here, because I know you, all right? You're not somebody that golfs because they hate their family. All right, because I know you, and I know how much you love your wife and your five kids and your tremendous father, but not everybody is.
All right,
all right. And the fact that the Tiger apologists, when we actually had Trey Wingo, a professional. Now, try to find that for Bob, if you can, Anthony, because I'm not sure Bob knows.
Okay.
Trey Wingo, former employee at this company, tremendous football guy, tremendous broadcaster.
Ooh, Tiger just hit it close on 10.
And that wasn't a goof. Like, that was his a reaction to a shot Tiger took. A guy that wouldn't walk over his dead body, a guy that would not pee on him if he was on fire, he reacted that way to another human being's golf shot.
Oh, but still.
Drives me crazy, and I'm my own man.
I mean, I did a show the night that Mickey Mantle passed away. All right, I was doing an overnight show at, like, whatever time it was, 1, 2 in the morning. Word comes in that Mickey Mantle has passed away.
Yep, 1995.
I announced that on the air. Terrible news. Mickey Mantle has, obviously, it was a long bout. I mean, we knew eventually it was going to happen, but Mickey Mantle's passed away. I spent the next 3 hours taking phone calls from men that were ranging in age from 50 to 70, 75 years old, weeping on the air that Mickey Mantle had passed away. There are many examples of us having a connection, an emotional connection to an athlete because of what we watched them do.
It's different. I'm going to tell you why it's different.
Oh, all right.
Those guys that were crying about Mickey Mantle's passing were remembering their childhood and remembering their dad taking them to their first baseball game and Mickey Mantle hitting a home run and their connection to their love of the sport and their love of the Yankees. Not a man that's 10 years older than Tiger, who was into golf way before Tiger, almost getting emotional on the air because it is the ultimate like my sport move, which I get all the time as a hockey fan.
Yep.
Anytime I tweet out, oh, I can't, it's so great to watch Connor McDavid play, or what an amazing play that this happened
in some
hockey game.
You're right, it is.
You'll be like, look at Don saying, please like my sport. That's the ultimate. The people that accuse me of that will do the exact same thing when Tiger Woods does something.
Well, I didn't realize that so much of this was just attached to Tiger.
Oh, and here's the other thing. I don't even know if I've ever admitted this on the air.
Sniff him dead.
I may not have admitted this on the air, and I'm a fraud, and I'm a piece of human excrement. I'm a tissue in the world of life. But you know I'm way over the top with stuff.
Yep.
Do you really know why I hate Tiger Woods so much?
No. No, obviously
10
not.
Years ago, maybe more. And Andrew, do you know the story? I might have told Andrew.
Keep going. I'm curious.
So it was probably around like 08, 09 when the Red Wings were in the Stanley Cup final. And he was at a tournament in like the suburban Detroit area.
Yeah, every year.
Because you're not golfing in Detroit. You're golfing
Buick.
In the suburbs of Detroit.
Buick had an event.
Okay.
If the tournament had the word Buick attached to it, Tiger was there.
So, Tiger's being interviewed. I don't know if it was the start or maybe after round one, whatever. But because it was in Detroit and the Red Wings were in the final, I guess some yo-yo reporter figured, let me just ask Tiger a question about the Stanley Cup final. And let me ask him, like, does he have a pick or whatever. It was like it was Red Wings Penguins because they played back to back years in 08 and 09.
He took a shot at hockey. This
and
is
he
a,
said,
he
"Is that still a
sport?
Thing?"
Oh.
He said, "Is that still a thing?" And that listen, I was never a fan because I'm not a golf fan, and I'm not even getting into his picadillos off the course. That's not my business,
right?
And that set me off because I'm like, who are you? Because you're the big golfer, the popular guy that a whole sport, and you decide to pick on.
But why are you? Why are you impugning the entire sport because you've got
because
it
he is the
this
entire
one
sport.
Guy?
Because he is the entire sport.
He's not the entire
sport. Oh, he absolutely is.
An explosion in popularity, obviously.
Right, irrelevant. Otherwise, it's a niche sport that became popular because of Tiger and now would do anything to have Tiger back. That's why Trey Wingo is basically orgasmic over a shot because the second Tiger's gone, your sport is relegated to volleyball.
It's a little more popular than that, but I see where
you're
going.
Because you play it.
Yeah, no. I mean, it does. It is a sport that will do a very consistent rating every single week on television.
Have you seen volleyball numbers on ESPN, Bob?
Well, maybe not.
I'm not all saying right. It's logical. I'm not even saying that you should agree with me.
I didn't
you should
want
make
to,
fun of me.
Yeah.
But this is how I am, all right?
Okay.
So it's a little thing. Plus, it's a lot more fun on the air to say I hate it than to just not have any opinion on
you.
It.
I, you're the only person that I have ever met that despises golf because of Tiger. I mean, some people, like Tiger Woods somehow drove you away from golf. That's a new one. But all right, we can get back to the phones. I was just, it was always curious, kind of in the back of my head, I would hear like the just utter venom with which you would talk about golf. And I'm a big golfer. I watch every tournament, obviously broadcast a major for ESPN.
Sure.
It's a blast. And was just wondering why there was just this irrational hatred of the sport, and Tiger Woods ruined it for you.
That's you nailed it. It's irrational.
Yeah.
Because people that I love, I mean, I love you. I love Dave Maloney. I love Greg Buttle. These people worship golf. I mean, sometimes if there's an afternoon Ranger game, I may lose Dave during the Masters. I'm like doing the game myself.
Yeah. I would say, and I would only, I'm not saying that you're ever going to change your way of thinking, but I think I would have a lot of people out there that are listening right now agree with me. To hate golf the way that you do, at least once a year, like I'm not a NASCAR fan, but I watch Daytona. I'm not a tennis fan, but I will watch the finals of Wimbledon. I will watch the big event in just about any sport. A Sunday at a major when it's really good, when there's four or five guys in contention, or like Mickelson at the Ocean Course, you're missing out on something you might not realize you're missing out on to not be into it, because it's pretty good. I mean, it is a sport that gives you and it's actually one of the only sports that I think is far better on television. Well, you want to be watching on television so you can watch all of these guys. If you're there in person, you're only watching whoever's hitting a shot on the one hole you're seeing in person. And at best, you may have like a cursory knowledge of what's going on elsewhere on the golf course. But it is a great TV sport when there's a bunch of guys creating drama late on a Sunday afternoon, especially at a major.
Yeah, I'm good.
And you're missing out. I feel bad for you that you're missing out.
I mean, I know, and I think if you want to talk about it, I can talk about it. I mean, I read about it. I have to know it sometimes. I'm not completely ignorant on the subject.
Clearly, you don't.
I'm also
think
not
you have
a big
it.
Individual sports guy. Like, I kind of lost my love for NASCAR because Nancy loved it, but then all the old school guys were gone, and I like Tony Stewart. I like going to the races, but it's hard to root for a person, you know? Like, I never really got into tennis that way.
Yeah.
I've always been more of a team sports guy than, like, an individual sports guy because I can't be that invested in one guy. And plus, I don't play it. You have to admit that a lot of the people, I've had this conversation with Buttle, that watch golf, almost watch it because it's the one sport where you can live vicariously through the athlete, because you can go out there and maybe learn something and take what he does with his swing and use it yourself when you go out on the course. And although you can't play as consistently well as a pro, if you're really good and you play every weekend, you might have your moment. So I can't watch a baseball game and then take what I watch in the baseball game to the Sasso softball on the 31st.
Right. Any other sport. It
but
is the
that,
only
so I
sport.
Think there's that relation, because I don't play it, and I did play it, and the greatest shot I ever had happened the last time I ever was on a golf course in Burbank, California. It was a tremendous shot under a tree, tapped it in, walked away, said, I'm never playing this sport again. So I've played it.
All right.
I've watched it. I don't like it.
That's a good drop the mic moment. But you're right. It's the only sport where you can legitimately know what it feels like to be that guy when you hit an 8-iron to a foot and you know for just one brief moment what those guys are able to do. I can't dunk, right? Like, I'm never going to be LeBron. I have no idea what it's ever going to be to feel that. But that's a good point.
But I'm glad you got that out of me. Nobody else even bothered to ask.
Well, I care.
And I think
you just love Tiger. Sniff him. Sniff him dead.
But I agree with that. Some people are just over the top. And it's all because I might have exaggerated about volleyball and all that. It keeps their sport, their favorite sport, relevant.
Well,
and they're in tears the day he goes away.
I sound like the Yankee fan. I'm a Yankee fan since 1948, but like, I remember where I was when I watched Nicklaus in 86.
I remember
you
telling me that.
So obviously, my fandom of the sport goes back, you know, long before Tiger. But there's no question. About 5 years before Tiger Woods made his appearance on the PGA Tour, a guy would probably win about $150,000, $180,000 if he won a PGA Tour event. 5 years after Tiger was on the PGA Tour, these guys were winning, you know, maybe not a million yet, but close to it. Like, he basically, his presence took the sport to a place where yes. these got now the 100th ranked player in the world travels on a private jet to tournaments. That's Tiger Woods.
And that I think it was good from the standpoint that it introduced the sport to people that never thought they'd ever be into it. And I applaud Tiger for that. And he's the greatest golfer that I ever saw, and I understand that. But I was just kind of having fun with people that I really respect that are like hanging on to him,
well,
knowing how everything is going to change after it's over.
I do think you need to realize how like when he was at his best, he was better, arguably, than anyone had ever been at anything going back maybe to Babe Ruth.
Right.
Like
but
when he was
over.
At his best, that was how much better he was than the next best
sure.
golfer in the world.
But that's been over for a while now, Bob.
It has. Yes.
And there are some people that need to let that go. Because you're right. It's not 2000 anymore.
Yeah. Although, I mean, he won the Masters 2 years ago.
No,
3 years
the
ago.
People
like,
win majors,
you know,
Bob.
He has had other moments.
No, I understand that. But and we get into this conversation with Peter all the time and we yell at each other over it. Yeah, he won the Masters. All right. But what you fell in love with 20 years ago. When a major was a fait accompli for him, where he intimidated golfers, where you couldn't touch him if he was on your tail going into Saturday or Sunday, that he was going to blow by you, that he was going to win, that he was the best golfer in the world and it wasn't close. That's over.
Yes.
And that wasn't over for what happened at the Perkins. That was over because his body started to break down and he was getting older. And also, I do believe, and this is another thing, that people didn't want to admit to because it kind of admits how human he was. He kind of got the yips in the majors. He did because he was so obsessed with breaking the record that I do think that even though he was the number one golfer in the world and was winning everywhere else, there was a moment where I think that pressure got to him a little bit and he wasn't the same. And then the Perkins thing happened and then his body started to break down and then he just became different. But even if none of those things happened, still, when you get to 46 years old, it's over.
Well,
and that's okay.
Mickelson just won at 50, but Tiger's body, I don't think, is ever going to allow him to do that again.
But even if he did come back, and I hope nothing but good things, and I hope he does come back. It would be an amazing sports story if he were to come back. But even if the car accident didn't happen, and he did pull a Mickelson, and he did win a major at 50, or 51, or 52. It doesn't mean he's back. So the Tiger's back, and the drop that we play all the time, do you think you compete at this level again? Yeah, because I just did. No, you didn't, because that level's over. That level's over.
I didn't
He's Willie Mays in the 73 World Series. He's Gretzky in 99.
Yep. I didn't mean to take us all the way down this rabbit
hole.
No, but
you know what? That's
curious.
What makes you a good talk show host and human being is that you – this was a therapy session. I don't know if people realize it.
Do you feel better?
I do.
Good.
I feel like a weight has been lifted. I'm not – Andrew can correct me if I'm wrong. There's never been this breakdown moment on the show. Not even off the air. Nobody even bothered to ask. No wow. one, ever.
I mean, Peter likes golf. Like, I would have thought at some point he would have been curious to know where this, like, burning hatred of the sport comes from.
But you know what?
And it's because Tiger took a shot at the Red Wings.
Listen,
that was really not what I was expecting to hear.
Just because he took a shot at the sport, not the Red Wings.
Yeah.
Red Wings I can handle. The sport? Come on.
Yeah. That's
it's people that
sport.
Work in the sport, Tiger. Okay, not everything yes. can revolve around you. All right? If I drop an orange around your waist, it doesn't spin around. All right, the orbit does the world does not orbit around you.
Right.
Now, people have asked. That doesn't make him a therapist. You knew what to ask. You sat me down. You broke it down. I applaud you for it. It didn't change my opinion, but you know what? I'm going to look at it differently now.
Okay.
Maybe I'm not going to be so nuts about it.
Baby steps.
But in serious, there is something very, very pompous about the Open. Just the fact that you have to refer to it as the Open. Come on. There is a lot of pomposity in this sport that is sometimes difficult to stomach, even for you.
Yeah, I call it the British Open, so people know what I'm talking about. But, you know, it's fine.
I want to thank you.
Okay.
This was a nice – seriously, I have this – I just feel better.
All right. I mean, if we were in studio, even during the break, we could hug it out. I'm glad that we got you to this point.
It wouldn't work because I'd have to hug the sport. Like, there'd have to be a moment where it's like, okay, now we can have that moment. And I mean, it's not
Mickelson winning last month or, you know, whatever, eight weeks ago at the Ocean, like at 50, that didn't do anything for him.
No, I was cool. Happy for him.
That was cool.
And we could stop with all that. Because, again, it doesn't matter. If you don't like it, you don't like it. I go through the same thing with hockey. I'll say to Michael, come on, that game last night did nothing for it. Like, I actually had it out with Michael. The Yankees were off, and the Islanders were playing a big playoff game. I think it was against Boston, and the Mets were playing. And he came on the air, and he opened the show saying he watched every pitch of the Met game. I'm like, what's wrong with you? There's an NHL playoff game. How can you possibly lose the faceoff to a regular season baseball game? And then I got to realize, because he doesn't matter. You know, Gretzky in his prime, we can go into a time machine and watch, you know, Maurice Richard play. If you don't like it, you don't like it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So I've given up on that whole thing. It's just, you know,
I tell
maybe
people
I was
all
a little
the time,
over the top with it.
You know what? Try this. Tell me. And first of all, tell me if you agree. I tell people all the time, because we were joking about Fish last hour. I think Fish is the ice hockey of music. Or I think ice hockey is the Fish of sports. You can tell me that you heard it on the radio, you clicked on the Sirius channel, you watched it on TV, it's okay, I don't really get it. You will not get it until you go. When you go in person, then you will have a completely different perspective when you watch it on TV. Anybody that is a diehard hockey fan is a fan that when their team is home, finds a way to get there at least a couple of times, if not have season tickets in person, and they know what the sport is in person. I take people all the time about Fish as well. Like, you can turn on you can flip a Fish show on or whatever and listen to it. No. It's the live experience. And I'm shooting myself in the foot here, because I'm going to be part of ESPN's television coverage of hockey, and I'm telling you, no, don't watch it on TV. Go in person. But I think if you go in person, it will lead you to be much more of a TV viewer of the sport, because you'll get it. Hockey is a totally different game if you have a chance to go and watch.
But there are people like Kay where it won't matter.
How could you go to an NHL hockey game, never having been before, no connection with it?
How can I not connect to God? Sometimes you just got to let it go.
Yeah, go away!
But my hatred is no more.
Well, all right. I'm glad I got you to this cathartic experience that I was a part of.
I needed it.
All right, I'm glad it worked
I need
out.
To dump this baggage. I can't be a hater anymore. It's time to move on. It's time to, you know, I got twins running around upstairs. You know, I'm 53 years old. It's time to just get over it and start. Thank you, Bob. I'm being serious. Thank you.
Glad to help. Yep.
All right, more of your calls. I got a question for Bob, because we really haven't spoke about this except in passing and in him hearing me and me hearing him on the radio about it. But it'll be the first time we can actually speak about this subject together. We're going to do that a little bit later on as well. NBA Finals, Mets, Yankees, so much to get into until 6:30, and it's all happening here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The 98.7 ESPN Beach Bash is back Friday, August 10th, Bar A in Lake Como, New Jersey. It becomes Bar K. Make your plans to head down to the Jersey Shore to join us for the Michael K. Show live from 2 to 6:30 p.m. with special musical guests, Pat Rowdy Band. It's all brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer, Samwell Pain Management, Calandra's Bakery, and Yuengling Light. Be the first caller right now at 1-888-987-ESPN to win a pair of VIP passes. That's 1-888-987-ESPN. You must be 21 years of age to enter. Let's go back to the phones, 1-800-919-3776, and let's talk to Nathan in Florida. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Nathan?
Hi, guys. I've been a Met and Jet fan since day one, and I have a Met comment for Klon, but I have a question for Bob, the Jet question. But firstly, Bob, I have to blame you for me not being able to watch any other NFL games, because when I sync my radio up to the TV, I can't change the channels, because once I change the channel, I can't.
That's a backhanded compliment that I really appreciate. Thank you.
Okay. So my Jet question is, after 4 years of seeing Sam Darnold play, what is your opinion of him?
I think he was dealt an impossible hand here, and I think he can still do this at a very high level. And I think he'll do well in Carolina.
Really?
I think he will throw a four-yard swing pass to Christian McCaffrey. He'll bing, 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 35 yards through a few guys, and he'll be going, where have you been my whole life?
Yeah.
Now, do I think he still has parts of his game that he has to get better at and work on? Absolutely. But I think everything that can make him a top-flight NFL quarterback is all still there. I think he just needs to be supported and given a chance. And he didn't have that. The problem here is that before Joe Douglas had a chance to really restock the roster with what would give him a chance, now they have to pay him. And now you have a chance to reset the financial clock with a new quarterback that's much more on the same timeline as your rebuild. So I understand why they did what they did with Zach Wilson. Having said that, I still think Sam can do this and do this at a high level.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Nathaniel, or Nathan, and thank you for the phone call, is that – and I wanted to ask you about this and have a conversation with you about this because I don't know how much you listened to the show during football season, but I became the Sam Darnold apologist on the show.
Right.
Because it was easy to just say, like Michael would say or Peter would say, more so Michael, I just haven't seen it. And I'm like, well, you say you haven't seen it, but we did. That rookie, nobody at the end of his rookie year was complaining that they drafted Sam Darnold.
No.
He was one of the best quarterbacks in football the last four games of the season. The team wasn't very good, and the expectations were exceptionally high going into that second year. Nobody was complaining about him being taken with the third overall pick. Then what happens in his second year? Basically, throw the first four games away. He was sick with mono against Buffalo on opening day, missed the next three, and really set the tone for a bad season with a bad coach.
And by the way, coming back from the mono, he still wasn't right for like another 3 weeks.
So that the second season was killed. And in the third season, everybody pointed to there was going to be a big year for him. Well, he had zero weapons, and they were a poorly coached football team.
Yeah,
now, that's not
even, even at the end of year two, they went 6-2 in their last eight games once he got right. Last year, he played with the worst set of skill position players that you could possibly put on an NFL field. And I say that as respectfully as possible to guys like Braxton Berrios and Chris Hogan, who are out there doing the best they can, but they drafted him a receiver, and the guy never got on the field, at least not until the last seven games of the season, when he and Sam had to develop chemistry behind a bad offensive line when the season was already half over.
Right.
So he was given no chance, and I think if you already look at the jumping-off point for Zach Wilson, Zach Wilson's going to have a puncher's chance as a rookie in a different way than Sam ever did any of his 3 years as the starter.
Yeah, and I agree with you. He'll go to Carolina where there's more weapons than he certainly had last year with the Jets. Now, again, that's not to say that he wasn't responsible for some of the poor play. He was. He still was making some mistakes. But
he tried to play hero ball.
And that's a mistake.
The only chance they had is if he could find a way to score some 17-point touchdowns. And unfortunately, he tried to play that way, and that's how he got hurt. He didn't get hurt because he's injury prone. He got hurt against the Broncos that Monday night game because of that Thursday night game, whatever it was, because he held onto the ball forever trying to make a play, and he got pile-drived into the turf.
And into my argument, with Michael, and it went on all year long because there wasn't a lot to dissect about a 2-14 season. It was just, what are they going to do with Sam? And I agree with you. His contract had a lot to do with them resetting. And you've got a new general manager that didn't draft him, and they had a chance to do something that's very unique, and that's kind of restart, not so much because Sam wasn't good, but because they had a chance to restart from the financial aspect of it.
If Darnold was a first- or second-year player and not going into his fourth year, where now you got to worry about the fifth-year option, now you got to worry about really paying him, I think that Joe Douglas would have traded the second pick, and I think he would have had an influx of talent and tried to build around Sam. I believe the reason they did what they did was because they were going to have to pay Sam Darnold and have him eat up a bunch of salary cap space while they're still trying to fix the team.
And the other thing that got thrown back at me, and again, I'm trying to give you Michael's side of things, but I heard it all year long. Well, how do you explain Justin Herbert? How do you explain Joe Burrow?
I'm like, massively more talented.
Well, first of all,
massively more talented.
No, I was never going to say that Sam Darnold was ever going to be, nor did anybody predict him to be, the best quarterback in football. You don't have to be Tom Brady to win a Super Bowl. Now, as far as Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are concerned, yes, they're better, but they played maybe not for better teams, but there were some weapons in Cincinnati. Certainly there were weapons in Los Angeles with the Chargers that the Jets didn't have. So, and listen, if those two quarterbacks turn out to be better than Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold, instead of being the best or the second best or the third best, is like the seventh best quarterback in the NFL, and you build around him, you can win titles. Eli Manning was probably never in the top 10, and they won two Super Bowls with him.
The best skill guy that Sam had in his 3 years with the Jets, the guy he was most productive with, was a walk-on free agent from Temple, who he is now reunited with in Carolina. Right? Robbie Anderson. Nope.
Right.
Sam didn't make plays to anybody in the volume he made plays to Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson is, you know, he's better than the one-dimensional player I thought he was when he was with the Jets. He's got a little bit more of game than that. But he's going to be, at best, the third, probably the fourth-best skill guy he's going to have on his next team. He was the best skill guy he had in 3 years with the Jets. So he is way more set up for success in Carolina. And by the way, nobody's picking Carolina probably to win more than five or six games this year either. They are still a rebuilding team. They can still do a lot more, especially on their offensive line, to help Darnold out as well. So I think they, if they make the commitment to give him 2 or 3 years to grow with their team, I think he – and doesn't mean Zach Wilson can't play either. If the Jets think Zach Wilson has a chance to be as good or better ultimately than Sam Darnold, it's a no-brainer to make that move because of the financial implications of having to pay your quarterback before the rebuild's over, as opposed to having a rookie quarterback that's cheap while you're rebuilding.
Well, let's go to Zach in Westchester. You're on ESPN New York.
Thanks, guys. This is like a bucket list for me because I've got the two of the four greatest voices in sports between Don and Greg Buttle to listen to that, and then had Bob and Marty every year. I miss those days. I really wanted to know.
What's up, Zach? Go ahead.
I really wanted to know, and it's okay. I just really want to know with the Jets for this season.
Yep.
Their over under is 6.5 or 7 in this sense. When you look at their first six games, and we've talked, you guys were just getting off about the Sam Darnold thing. You have Darnold in that game, and they've got two games against New England, Tennessee. You got to go to London to play Atlanta, and then you have a House of Horrors playing at Denver. And this season could get away from them in a sense, just like last year. All of a sudden, we're looking at 0-6, and I'm going, where is the just hoping optimistically, what are we going to be able to look for this season, and hoping that we're not going into the same desperate of going 0-10 and being.
I do not think they are going to be that. Remember, it's a 17 game season. So if you're thinking just in terms purely of Vegas, you want to put a couple of bucks on a team, 6.5 wins. I think they could be a 7-win team, and I think it's worth, you know, throwing some few dollars down and have given yourself something to root for all year. Sure, I do think they could be that, but make no mistake, as much talent as they have added to this team, there absolutely are places on this team that still need to be addressed. Like, they didn't do anything at corner, right? That's a vitally important position for any NFL defense, and they couldn't check every box in one offseason. So they can still get better, and I think they will. And it's a rookie quarterback, too, but they only won two games last year. I mean, you know, what do you have a right to expect? So 7 or 8 games this year, if they won that many, I think fine. That's a really good improvement. If they do better than that, then I think they're a really good story.
But I also think, what does it look like? Maybe you've got a rookie head coach and you've got a rookie quarterback. So what are realistic expectations? And you could say, and I still have to remember that you've added another game. So let's say they go 5-12. Well, 5-12 sounds like a bit of a disappointment, but maybe it's a great 5-12 where they're in every single game and they just get bested by a better team or a better quarterback. Or they can go 5-12 and they're getting blown out in most games, and the only games they win, they kind of stumble into it, and you don't feel good about it. I mean, I'm always hesitant to say what the record needs to be. I need to see what it looks like. And we'll dissect it all season long, but I don't think anybody expects a winning season. You just want to see a competitive season. You want to see the quarterback be better in week 17 than he was in week 1. and the team to be better in Week 17 than they are in Week 1. Yeah, that's what you want to see is a better team.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Cautiously optimistic, especially with what they've done in the offensive line and the fact that they are giving this quarterback not only protection but some legit receivers to throw to. Like, it sounds like Elijah Moore is a budding star that is going to be a jack, like a Swiss Army knife. They're going to use it a lot of different ways. Bringing back Jamison Crowder, I think, was a really big deal. Mm-hmm. And Corey Davis. Corey Davis isn't a number one receiver, but, I mean, he certainly at least lends out on the edge with him on one side and Denzel Mims on the other. You know, that's a decent 1-2 punch. So let's put it this way. If they go 7-10, and in their 10 losses, I don't know, 6 or 7 of them, they're scoring 20, 24 points and losing a fourth quarter game, then I think at the end of the year, like you said, there's an eye test element to,
yeah, of course.
All right, well, they got better. Like, that. This is what you're supposed to – if there's a building block season, you can make the argument that would be a building block season.
1-800-919-3776, big 5 o'clock hour, dive back into the Mets and the Yankees. ENN coming up at 6. It's Don and Bob on Yes at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.